Hello, everyone. Welcome to Supernatural Junkies. I'm Super Alex.
I'm Dr. Kevin, and I am natural today.
I guess that means that I will be the junkie.
He is definitely got a lot of junk.
Wait a minute. I think there might be somebody else here.
Yeah, don't leave me off.
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who is that?
This is Dr. Dozier, and I'm lifting it up spiritually.
That's right.
He's pumping you up spiritually.
Yeah, pump you up.
We are here.
And he we are...
With the Supernatural Junkies.
Have you ever wondered how you could get your hands on some awesome Supernatural Junkies gear? Well, the answer to that is it's now available on redbubble.com. We have a shop on there for Supernatural Junkies, and there's t-shirts, leggings.
Call Dr. Dennis. Hey, brother. You got me up? Okay, sounds good. Let me see your, I guess Sam is on as well here. Let's see here. And ask to unmute. And Alex should be up here in a minute. She had canceled yesterday, so that's why all of a sudden it was back on. I had just sent them, and I'm having a little issue with my computer this morning. So, yeah. All right. Sounds good. Bye. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. You're doing what my wife is doing downstairs. I had told her it was canceled, so she hadn't even started to get ready too much, but she'll be up here in just a few minutes in our studio. I like your backdrop there.
Thank you. Why did you think it was canceled?
So she had told me that you wanted to do it later in the afternoon, Katrina did. Yeah. So then I had told her, unfortunately, my wife had another appointment that afternoon. So, yeah. So I just shot her an email this morning about rescheduling for next week. So then I got her text message here. So anyways, but there's actually four of us. Dr. Dozier is going to join us a little late because I had told him it was canceled this morning. But how are you doing today?
Do you want to cancel it?
No. Dennis, are you in yet? Or let's see here. He's in here. So I've already got one of our, so there's four of us.
Wow. That's not fair. Three against one.
Well, it is. And especially, I got to get my wife in here, right? So that always helps. Yeah, no, she's, of course, we're, you know, talking all about the Save Our Children conference and the stuff that you're going to be covering there. So we got to interview Kevin yesterday. And so that was a treat. And
yeah.
So now we get to hear the true story. You know. How you guys met, we'll be asking you that one, of course. And so we start, you know, probably with, you know, just kind of what you've gone through with your career and things like that.
Right. Well, if you want, we can just get started.
Let's see here. I've got to get my other guest back in. Let me call him here. He was on. Hold on. Call Dr. Dennis.
I'm signing back in.
Okay. As soon as you get on, we will go ahead and start here.
Not unmuted.
Yeah, I know. We just did this yesterday. Let's see here.
There we go. You got me now?
All right, good. Hey, Sam, this is Dr. Dennis O'Hara. He's my other partner.
Hi, Sam.
So we can actually get going here. My wife will be joining us shortly, so she'll be popping in here in just a second. I just have to change one little setting before I get going here.
Sam, what do you like to talk about?
I talk about everything.
Well, I, of course, told them that, you know, you're a health education and a freedom advocate. You know, and, you know, we know you guys do a lot of homeschooling and stuff like that. And Kevin was telling us about how, you know, positive that was for the kids. We also are homeschoolers ourselves. We do have a teacher that comes. And so that really obviously helps. But, you know, that's something that we really connect with. And of course, you know, we're trying to bring out solutions, right? And, you know, you think about
solutions to what?
To what they're doing to our kids. That's what the Save Our Children conference is about. And as you know, it's the same thing with us. Our kids were behind. They're not doing good in school. And you get them homeschooled and all of a sudden they're, you know, they catch up 5 years in just 2 years. Yeah. So it's pretty astonishing.
So let's talk about that. We're going, right? We're on our
way. No, I'm going to go ahead and start us here and I just need one little second. And we are recording. So I just need 1 second of pause and then I'll go ahead and start us. Hello, everyone. This is the Supernatural Junkies, Sansla Alex. No, she's coming in just a minute. We have Dr. Dennis in the house, and Dr. Dozier is going to be joining us in just a few minutes. Say hello, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
That's right. He's back. And, of course, Alex will be joining. We have another special guest today. We're so honored to be able to interview some of the speakers for the Save Our Children conference that's coming up here in the Tampa Bay area. It is Sam Sorbo. How are you doing this morning, Sam?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. Today's a good day.
You're ready to go. You're ready to go. Well, we had the pleasure, of course, of talking to your husband, and he's a great interview because he's been everywhere. He's done all that, and so of course he was giving you lots of plugs the other day as well. So you know, you are an author, you're a speaker, you're a producer, and you're also an actress. So what kind of got your career going in the actress direction?
Oh well, so what got my career going in the actor's direction was actually I started a modeling career when I was in college, and that took off. And so I started to realize that I could do the things that I had been taught I couldn't do. So I went to school, like most of us. I went to what is known as a good public school. We moved for the better schools. So we were in the good school district. And of course, the teacher, the drama teacher at my high school was a failed actor, right? She
went
to Broadway. She was an attractive young woman. She had not succeeded on Broadway, so she took a job teaching. So what was her message to all of her students? You can't succeed as an actor on Broadway or anywhere because she had not succeeded. This is a danger when we're hiring people who are failures at their chosen profession, and so they then decide to teach. And I'm not saying that all teachers are that, but in her case, she was. So she dissuaded me from pursuing acting. I know that she also dissuaded another young actress who was a couple of years ahead of me in school, who also went on to a very prominent Hollywood career. So she's been proven wrong at least twice. But it wasn't until I had started modeling that I realized, oh, maybe people are wrong when they say don't try certain things.
Well, for some reason, my video has dropped here, but we're going to continue on. When you say you got to do some things that you were told you wouldn't be able to do, what did you mean by that?
Well, I was talking about acting.
Oh, really? So you didn't have a lot of people cheering for you then, right?
No, I was actively dissuaded from pursuing acting all through my high school years.
Oh, my goodness.
And here's the thing. Like, I was tall, so I wasn't getting the lead roles anyway. You know, there were other things that were dissuading me. But you know, guidance counselors will tell you acting is not a career path. It's not viable. So I went to college. I was pre-med. I was studying science and STEM stuff. And then I ended up modeling over the summer. And that was so successful that I continued and realized that I could make a lot of money modeling. Now, I was raised in school to go to college, get a degree, get a career, make a lot of money, and then consider sort of family and having a family, raising kids and all that stuff. But the first and foremost is college prep and career readiness. Go make money. And that is the focus of our culture today because of our education system. And I shouldn't call it an education system because that's not what it is. It's actually a school system, which is different than an education system. But we're trained, right? We're schooled to think money is the answer. And so when I had achieved the money, because modeling pays very well, and I was very successful, I realized, oh, so I did everything that they told me to do. And that's when I went on a spiritual journey. But it wasn't until then.
So after the modeling, you started your journey, huh?
So I modeled for several years, and modeling led to acting. TV commercials and then acting. And I had always wanted to act. So it was a natural progression and it worked for me.
What the shows would we have seen you in? Because some people, our audience, may not be familiar with your acting career.
Well, of course, I co-starred on Hercules for several episodes. But before that, I was on Chicago Hope for a half season. I've done a number of movies with notable people. I was in a movie with Bruce Willis. I was in a movie with Brandon Fraser, a number of different movies and TV shows. And so people can go on IMDb and look up my whole resume. But yeah.
So how was that? Did you enjoy that part of your life? And did you get to stay in some great locations? Or how was that?
Yeah, acting is 5% absolutely thrilling and the other 95% fairly boring and or frustrating. But that 5% makes it worth it. I really enjoyed it. I still do. I still produce and act. I acted in a movie on Tuesday, actually. So that was kind of fun. It's fun. It's fun for me because I get to do a little bit of everything. And I find that makes life interesting.
So, of course, Kevin was telling us about how he enjoyed the time he was when he was in New Zealand. How was that over there?
So when I first went down there and met him, of course, I fell head over heels in love with him. And so that was pretty good. And then they brought me back to play 3-episode arc as his love interest. And that was also a lot of fun. So New Zealand was great. And then we got married. And shortly before we got married, he had his health crisis. And so then New Zealand was, as much as I loved it there, it was a difficult time for us. It was a very difficult time for him. It was a challenging time for me because I was his caretaker, his caregiver, and his cheerleader. And so that was challenging. But I love New Zealand as a country. I love the nature there. If you watch the Hercules show, and I do recommend that families watch the Hercules show. A lot of families really enjoyed watching that show as a family. There are people who still come up to Kevin today and say, you know, I watched you all growing up with my grandpa. And every time I see the show, I get warm feelings for my grandfather and, you know, that kind of thing. It's a morally principled show. It's great for kids. It shows heroism. It shows a reluctance to violence, you know, propensity for trying to solve problems without violence. This is all good things, right? And so in that sense, it's really such a great show. But the co-star of the show really is New Zealand. And so a lot of people tuned into the show just to see the lush greenery of New Zealand, the foliage, and it's so beautiful.
So, of course, we did ask Kevin, you know, how you guys met. And so some of this story is matching up. So now we want to hear the real truth.
Are you checking up on him?
Yes. Oh, we could not help. We can't resist, you know, because, you know, we all of us couples have our stories, right? So this is a great story that we heard from Kevin. So we want to hear it from your perspective.
Which story?
Well, the how you guys met. Of course, you said you met, you know, on the set there, and then how things, you said you fell head over heels in love. So tell us how all that happened.
Well, okay. Well, I don't know what he's told you, but
that's the whole point.
Oh. This is like the newlywed game.
Oh, that's funny. So he basically pursued me almost right from the start. It was interesting because I flew down there. And by the way, if you want the nitty gritty on this, it's in the book True Strength.
Oh, great.
That's his autobiography. And so he tells, but I will say I wrote that chapter, and I wrote a few of the chapters and they are the best chapters in the book, but regardless, the whole book is worth reading. Anyway, So I was supposed to fly down there and my flight was delayed by a day because the volcano spewed ash into the atmosphere and they wouldn't allow the planes to fly through it. And because I was delayed for the day, I missed the whole cast read through. So the director said, listen, I want to do a read through with the two stars of the show just because it's important that we do a read through. And she wasn't here for the whole cast read through. And so poor Kevin, you know, he worked 14, 16 hours a day and then went to the gym for a couple hours every day. And, you know, he's dead tired. He already spent his evening doing the read through the night before. Now he has to go back and do another read through with this guest star who just flew down. But when we met, because I had come off of a show with complete jerk. I did a show that was very similar. It was a hero buddy show. They were, you know, crime fighters or whatever. And that guy, the star of that show, had been such a jerk. And he wasn't even that famous. And he wasn't even that good looking. And so I was concerned that when I met Kevin, who was uber famous and tremendously good looking, that there would be this, you know, he would be weird. So I decided that when I met him, I would hug him because I knew that I would have to kiss him in the kissing scene. I knew that it was supposed to be a romantic interest in the script. And so I decided to sort of break down that physical barrier that you have with people right off the bat. And that way, if he was a jerk, I could work my way around it. I could act my way around it, so to speak. And so I hugged him when I first met him, and he got embarrassed. And he said, oh, okay, we'll do the Hollywood thing. Woo, you know, hug. And I thought, that's interesting. That was not the reaction that I expected. And then it just went from there. And he's an outrageous flirt. And unfortunately, I pick up on that very easily. And so we hit it off. It was really quite something.
Remember, men only flirt with those they're interested in.
Is that true? I don't know if that's true.
Well, he said,
I mean, you would, why flirt with someone you're not interested in?
Well, to make them feel good.
Yeah.
He did tell us that he pursued you, that it took some time for you to agree to go out with him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when he first wanted to, you know, hey, how are we going to work this out kind of thing? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about because I don't date actors. I don't date guys with long hair. And I don't date long distance. Like, there's nothing here to work out. It's not this isn't happening. And he just wouldn't take no for an answer, so to speak. And we had our first date down there, and it went surprisingly well. He confessed to me on our first date that he knew where he wanted to get married, which is first date conversation, of course.
Was that scary? Red flag.
It wasn't scary. It was just weird. It's just like, dude, what are you smoking? And then he said to me, and this is in the book also, he goes, yeah, there's a little chapel in the Swiss Alps. And I said, in Garmisch? And he looked at me, he's like, yes, how do you know that? And I said, well, my grandfather gave me a painting of it, and it's hanging on my wall at home. And he's like, well, that is really weird. Oh, and I'm going to have three kids, boy, girl. And I said, well, that's weird because that's what I'm having, boy, girl.
Wow.
And so I think at that moment, we kind of were like, uh-oh, there's something that's happening here. And then, of course, we did have boy, girl, which is just freaky. So,
well, Kevin was very cute. I mean, I love when he was explaining and how he said it took a while for him to get you to go out on a date. And he said something about country music and then find out you were a Christian. And so he was like, he couldn't help but have to take notice. And then he recollected how his dad, which must not be a hugger, hugged you right away.
Yes.
So he said a few things that were just very endearing and very cute. So, you know, I proposed to my wife in a Hello Kitty costume, and that's one for the books. So,
yeah,
but I got her for sure. So, long story short, so after you did that show, you said you did a little piece on the Chicago Hope, was it?
Mm. I did Chicago Hope after I did my first episode of Hercules and before they called me back. I did like 8 episodes of Chicago Hope.
Was it really in Chicago?
No. No, but I really did play a doctor on TV.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean, that can come in handy, right? Later on.
You know, Chicago Hope was cool because one of the things they did for us, because we were playing doctors, we were going to be in operating rooms pretending to operate and stuff. They wanted us to feel as comfortable and as knowledgeable as possible. So they set it up for us to go witness actual surgeries. So I witnessed a quintuple bypass. I was in the operating room for that. I was in the operating room for a full knee replacement. And because I was pre-med in college, I was fascinated by that stuff. So I really appreciated the opportunity. So it's, you know, depending on the part, acting is quite multifaceted.
Cool. So, you know, once you guys decided to get married, you know, and you are now thinking about having kids, how did you handle the professional, you know, changes that you've had to make? Because, you know, now you're a major advocate, you know, for freedom with respect to education, and especially with homeschooling. You know, Kevin was telling us about the homeschooling. So how did that transition happen for you? Now you're married, and now you're trying to move into maybe a next stage, and then to where you are today.
So shortly before I met Kevin, I sent a prayer up to God because I knew that I wanted to be married. And I wasn't finding a guy in Hollywood, strangely. Go figure. And so I sent a prayer up to God and I said, okay, God, I get it. There's going to be a compromise. I just don't know what the compromise is. Like, where am I supposed to compromise to achieve my goal of family and children, right? And in other words, you know, is he going to be short? Is he going to be bald? Is he going to be stupid? Is he going to be like, what's the compromise? Because I get it. I'm not going to meet the perfect guy. Right. And because, you know, when you're dating, it's like it's good, good, good. Uh-oh. Right. And then you're like, uh-oh, that's a red flag. That doesn't work. But should it work? Should I make it work? Should I, you know? And then a couple months after that, I would say, I flew down to New Zealand and I met Kevin. And despite, you know, my reluctance to date him, he was perfect. He's brilliant. He's a good actor. He's darn good looking. Like, what is wrong with that specimen of a human being? Nothing, except he lived across an ocean, which wasn't even like a thing. Like, okay, we'll just have to work that out kind of thing. And in fact, I thought, okay, so sort of that's the compromise. Like, we're going to have to work at it a little bit. And so we began dating, and then he got ill and he was in intensive care. And I booked probably the best job I've ever been offered as an actress. It was a national network TV commercial, which means they pay you upfront a ton of money for your talent to go and perform the commercial. It's like a 3-day shoot, New York City, first class all the way, all expenses paid, lots of money. But then when the commercial's done, ka-ching, 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 every time it airs. And it's national and it's network, which means it's going to air a lot. And I booked the job and I realized, and the commercial was for my all-time favorite thing, which is ice cream. It's like, it wasn't for, you know, peanuts, which to take them or leave them. It was for my favorite thing. And so I went into intensive care and I said to Kevin, he knew what was going on. I said, I booked the commercial. Do you want me not to go? At which point he said, yes, I want you not to go. Because he was lying on his back, unable to move because he had blood thinners going through his body. And one false move, he could just bleed out. He was in dire, dire straits. And I said, okay, you don't want me to go. And I sat down and I looked up at heaven, basically, right? And I said, oh, that's the compromise. I have to sacrifice my career. And I did it right then. I was like that. It was like, oh, is that the compromise? I get it. I have to make the choice to do family. Family has to come first. Everything else is secondary. That's the compromise. We're not taught this in school. We aren't taught that every choice is binary. We're taught to make pros and cons lists. Which, by the way, have you ever made a pros and cons list? It just offers you a ton of confusion, right? It doesn't really sort anything. It just, it gets you to think about the thing, but it doesn't really offer clarity. Clarity is offered when you make priorities. When you prioritize things, then your first priority offers you your decision. And all the other priorities will have to take second place because they are second place, right? And so I walked away from my career, which then leads up to, it took us a while to get pregnant. It was difficult for us. He was very sick. The medications that they had him on, I think, did a number on his whole system and stuff. And so we struggled to get pregnant. But by the time we had three kids, I wasn't really working because we lived out of the country and foreign countries don't like it when Americans come and work. We don't mind, apparently, but other countries do. And so it was a struggle for me to get any work as an actress when Kevin had recovered enough to sort of allow for that. But we got back to the States when he finished up his second show. And because he did end up working through his illness, which was a tremendous blessing for him to be able to do that. We got back to the States and I started auditioning again. And as of my, I don't know, third audition, which it's like a 3-hour process. You leave the house and to get there and then you sit there for a while and then you do the audition, then you drive back home. I got back home and my toddler runs up to me. This is my youngest is about 1.5 years. And she's got one word and a finger. And she runs up to me and she goes, no, 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 no. And I'm like, what's that about? So I pick her up. I put her on my hip. She turns right to the nanny and says, bye-bye. And I thought, oh, it's another one of those binary choices. You can do kids or you can do your career. But if you do your career, you compromise your family. At least that's the way that I saw it. Because it's a compromise. It has to be. If you're not 100% there, you're less than 100% there, right? And so I walked away from my career again. And that developed into my attitude towards home education. But it wasn't until Braden went through second grade. We moved for a better public school system. And then he did first and second grade. And it wasn't until towards the end of second grade that I started to go, you know, this school thing just isn't working out. This is not education the way that I see it. And it's detrimental. And that was before Common Core and before all the woke ideology and before all that stuff. I could see through it and I could see what they were doing with school was kill the curiosity of the child, kill his desire to learn. And that's what school accomplishes, sadly. And I'll say there may be 10% of the population where it doesn't actually deter them. But by and large, it's a deterrent to learning. School is for children.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I always feel we homeschool too, that school is largely training people how to be obedient workers, right? It's an indoctrination process. It's really not teaching them to think for themselves, to ask questions, right? You know, it's right. Poo-poo to ask, you know, outside the box questions. It has to be within this same frame that they want you to stay in. And yeah, I definitely agree with that. I also loved what you said that, you know, when you make priorities, that will determine your decisions. That's totally, that's how I always feel when we're talking about stuff. And I had to give up my career as an editor for NASDAQ for many years out in Los Angeles. Actually, I lived for a long time and then came to Florida. And so when we got married, it was tough giving all that up. And then I had to realize like my ego was caught up in that, you know, it was an ego choice too. And I mean, that was huge. So I totally respect that you said that because I think that sometimes you aren't taught that in school, but there's also such a lack of respect for stay-at-home moms. When you realize,
I'd love to drill down on that for just a minute because you really bring up a very important point. Your ego was caught up in it. So this is what happens because of school. And this is why I am so adamant about my views about school. School teaches you college prep and career readiness is the ultimate aim for the soul. Okay. Your job is to make money. That's your identity. So you as an editor for NASDAQ, that was your identity. That was your whole value, was your money earning potential, was your value. That's what you were indoctrinated to believe. And, you know, we're talking about the indoctrination of children today. Oh, how dare you indoctrinate the child today, right? Guess what? We've all been indoctrinated because we went through K through 12. So you were indoctrinated to believe that your value was tied to your job. And if you stepped away from your job, you were making a big sacrifice.
Yeah, who am I?
And by the way, you were also likely indoctrinated to believe that sacrifice is bad. Sacrifice is a dirty word. Sacrifice is only the giving up of. But the Christian idea of sacrifice is the getting of. Jesus sacrificed his life for humanity, not for nothing. And so when we sacrifice for something. I gave up my career, sure. For what? For my family. There, you can't put a price tag on that. You can't put a value on that. It's beyond value. And so we have to really step outside of our own indoctrination, the way that we were taught to think, that we are intrinsically only our identity as a worker. And that's blasphemy, right? That's not valuing the soul. That's only valuing the physical, material, productive individual. That's a horrible thing to do to a child. And it was done to you, right? And so you finally said, wait a minute, I have to set my priorities. My family is actually more important than my job. Huh. Imagine that. That's crazy. I guess I'm crazy. And you're saying, well, we don't value, you know, moms who work inside the home, the mom, right? Of course we don't value her. It goes against their value system, but their values are not our traditional values. They've installed an entirely different value system. And this is why we're seeing our entire culture go down the tubes, because their value system is tied to the dollar. And therefore, you'll sacrifice your children, you'll sacrifice your honor, your virtue, your own sense of self, you'll sacrifice for the almighty dollar. You'll sacrifice your bodily autonomy. You have to get the shot. If you want to keep your job, you'll sacrifice your bodily autonomy to keep your job, your quote, job, which is actually your identity, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all because of their indoctrination in the schools. That's why children don't belong in school. If you love your children, do not put them in school.
So when did you ever put your children in public school or anything like that?
Yes.
You said up until second grade.
And then how did that happen? How did you decide that that was not going to work?
Well, our second grade class was the worst class the school had had. Which got, thank God, I was exposed to like the worst possible situation so that I could go, oh yeah, this is not working, and be sure of it, right? And as well as my son was doing, I was not satisfied. I did not like hearing that she sat him next to the poorly behaved child so that he could help get her off his back, off her back. You know what I mean? Like my son was the good kid, but also there was stuff that was coming home from school just from the other kids and stuff that I didn't appreciate, which is another reason why your children should not associate with any child you don't know or any child whose parents you aren't, you know, fully familiar with, because the stuff that the kids are getting access to today is very dangerous stuff, and they will spread it like wildfire. And if you don't keep a lid on that, your children will be exposed to things that you do not want them exposed to. And so I just, after second grade, I said, you know, this just isn't working. And I said to Kevin, I think if I fail at homeschooling, he'll still be better off. And I still hold that to be true. If all you do is pull your children out of school and you do nothing else for them except keep them off electronics, they will end up better off than kids in school. There's no doubt in my mind with everything that's going on in the schools today and everything that the children are being exposed to. But I will say this. I thought, what's the harm? My second and third children can both go to the public school kindergarten. It's free. It's like a playroom. They'll just have some fun. They'll learn their letters. And what's the harm, right? It's half day. Like, really? And it's cute. The teachers are sweet and they're lovely and whatever. It took 10 years for my daughter to figure out and tell me that, in fact, it was in kindergarten where she learned that she was stupid. And that's why she could never hear how bright she was from me. So my daughter is not your standard learner. She learns differently. Her brain works very differently than other people's brains, which makes her brilliant in ways that you and I can't fathom. You know, a pretty bright person. She beats me by a mile. It's crazy the way.
I'm freezing.
I love math, right? She thinks differently. So it's because she didn't conform. And she didn't conform in kindergarten. That's where she learned that she was stupid.
Mm.
So, I mean, the idea, and by the way, it was a nothing burger. It was, she didn't read the sight words as well as the kid before her. The class laughed at her, and that's where she learned she was stupid. It was a nothing burger. And I'm just trying to warn parents, you have no idea what's going on in the classroom. It could be nothing, and it will affect them for the rest of their lives. Wouldn't you rather be the one to make the mistake, to know that the mistake was made, to be able to fix, redeem the mistake before it gets to be 10 years later down the line, when now I'm realizing that every time I told my daughter how clever she was, she thought I was lying to her.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. It's crazy. And that was 1 year of kindergarten.
Wow. So both our boys are Asperger's. And so our son in about fourth grade, they both went to private school, and he was being bullied really bad. And it started to change who he was, you know, and that was the biggest indicator to us, like, no, we can't do this because it's changing him. And, you know, he still holds a bit of that, you know, where he does, feel inferior at times, that I can tell, but it was all from that, you know, and you spend so much time trying to undo all that damage, you know. And our other son, he was literally so obsessed with getting his work done, he would never even go out for lunch in recess for years. And the teachers would be like, he's so studious. No, that's not good. There's an indicator that something else is, he should be wanting to play with other kids. And they're like, no,
but the thing is with him. What we have to understand is that the school's goal, the teacher's goal in the classroom. Now, I'm speaking in generalizations, okay? So don't come at me with, well, this teacher is really fabulous because she does whatever. Generally speaking, teachers go to teaching colleges. They learn how to, I don't know, to speak to students, but their main focus is classroom management, is behavior management. Your boy sat at his desk. He didn't even go outside for recess. What a brilliant child. He's perfect. I love him because he doesn't cause me any hassle.
Right.
He does all of his work.
Totally.
He's a good example for all the kids. Never mind that they're bullying him while he's being a good example. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
She's just happy that he's doing what she needs him to do.
Right.
But started the conversation. You said they're really trying to just make your children obey and follow directions. And here's the problem that we have. Our entire culture now, K through 12, we've all been K through 12. We've all been underparented and overschooled. And so now we are in a trust the experts phenomenon. That's what we just went through, where nobody even questioned 2 weeks to flatten the curve, another 2 weeks to, I don't know what, slow the spread, right? Slow the spread. Nobody said, well, why not speed the spread? I don't know. I mean, I'm just asking, like, who said slow the spread? Where did that come from? Where's the data that slowing the spread is better than speeding the spread, right? But nobody asked any questions because trust the experts.
We were asking questions. We wrote a book about it, but you're absolutely right.
And of course, generally speaking, there were some people who asked about, I mean, I remember going into a store and there was a gal in the store and she was like looking through things and she had one of those masks on that was like this. It looked like it was sort of a mask, but you could tell it was like very large screen, right? And I just looked at her and I said, take the mask off. You're not fooling anybody. Why are you wearing it? But we're too afraid to make a stand, so we cheat. And that's how they win. They get us to lie and cheat.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the win? They're still winning. So don't lie, don't cheat. Stand up for what you believe instead. But we're not taught to stand for what we believe. We are taught in school. There are four main things that we're taught in school. Don't ask. Why do I say that? Because this is a barrier to entry. And we're taught first day of school, you have to sit down, shut up. Don't ask a question unless you first get permission. So don't ask. Don't try, because failure's bad. And if you fail, you'll get a red F and the class will laugh at you. So failure's bad. So don't try. Don't think, because the teacher just wants you to regurgitate what she told you on the test. Don't try to think outside. Don't question the teacher about what the rule is or what the fact is. Just regurgitate. So that's don't think. And then the final one is don't read. Teacher read the book. She's telling you what's in the book. You don't have to read the book, right? And that's why we all think we're incapable of home educating, because we don't know how to read the book. It's all there in the book. The lesson is right there in the book. You just read the lesson and learn it. That's how you learn it. And so if you teach your child nothing but that, they'll be able to teach themselves whatever they want for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, you brought up a great point about indoctrination. People don't realize that public school system is actually the 10th pillar of communism, which reads...
How many pillars of communism are there?
10 pillars of communism. And number 10 is free education for all children in public schools abolition of children's factory labor is in its present form, a combination of education and industrial production. What they do indoctrinate.
Ah.
Yeah.
Familiar.
So if you look at the Communist 45, they've achieved them all. But number 17 is get control of the schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda, soften the curriculum, soften. Mm. What does that mean, right? What soften the curriculum means is make communism sound more like grandpa with candy and less like the hard fist of control tyranny that it is, right? Get control of teachers associations, check. Put the party line in textbooks, check. Eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression, this is number 28, or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the ground that it violates the principle of separation of church and state, check. And so I'm just pointing out, yeah, they're done. I only know the 45. I don't know the 10 pillars, but the 45, they've done basically all 45.
Well, when you look at it, even look at the Pledge of Allegiance, right? That's a form of indoctrination. People, of course, well, it's patriotic. Well, go back and recite the Pledge of Allegiance, right? Where they're your allegiance to the system. You know,
well, but here's the thing: you shouldn't be against indoctrination. That's education. Education is the indwelling of doctrine into the child. That's what education is. The problem is when the doctrine is false, which communism is, which what they are doing in the schools is. When we took the Bible out of schools, we didn't make schools irreligious, which, by the way, irreligious is like one of the fastest growing religions in the world, according to Wikipedia. The point being that secularism is its own religion. So we didn't make non-religious schools. We just made schools that don't worship the one true God. And they are now indoctrinating the children with their doctrines.
True.
But we are called to indoctrinate our children with the proper doctrine, with truth. And here's the joy. If all you do is take your kids out of school and read the Bible with them every day for 15 minutes. I'm not asking for more than that. It's literally 15 minutes of Bible reading every day. They will learn truth and they will love it so much that they will go far beyond what you've ever done with your life. That's what happens to kids when they get truth. They cling to it. They love it so much. And I did not know this with my kids. My kids taught me this because for whatever reason, I thought we should read the Bible every day. I didn't grow up with the Bible, so what did I know? But we sat down and read the Bible every day, and they would read out loud, I'd read out loud, and we'd talk a little bit about it. And I'm kidding you not, less than half an hour every day. Basically, every day, if we skipped a day, we skipped a day. It wasn't like the end of the world. We weren't on any kind of timeline. I didn't like say, okay, we got to get through the book of John by, you know, February 12th or whatever. We just read the Bible. We flipped around in the Bible. We read the book of John. And then we said, oh, let's do, you know, I don't know, Job. Let's do Job now. We'll do Job. We just bopped around the Bible. But they got truth. They're more fervent than I am. They're more dedicated than I am. They understand truth. Maybe not more than me. I'd hate to say that I don't, you know, but I am humbled by their staunch stance.
That's awesome, Sam. That's incredible. I need to ask the question, the Sam Sorbo show. Tell us about that.
Oh, this thing? thanks for asking. So I started a new show about 3 weeks ago. This is the end of my third week, called the Sam Sorbo show. That way I don't forget what it's called. It's on patriot.tv, which is General Mike Flynn's new endeavor. It's very exciting. Actually, today, well, I don't know when this airs, but today and tomorrow we're having our Patriot TV launch party. And so we're going to have all the hosts and just hanging out, chatting about the point. And the point of Patriot TV is to discuss truth. I believe that we learn in the exchange. So just as in wealth is created in the exchange, you're familiar with that concept, right?
Yes.
This is what made the United States the greatest wealth engine was the free exchange. We had a free economy. A little bit less so now. Hopefully we'll get it back a little bit, but So the free exchange and the free exchange of ideas is what creates a growth in knowledge and understanding. And that is why the left seeks to shut down the free exchange of ideas with their safe spaces and their la, 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 I can't hear you, and their censorship on social media. Because it's not because they're against the truth as it is because they understand that if you add truth into the mix, some people will improve. Some people's understanding will improve. And they seek impoverishment for all. And so they can't allow a prosperity of knowledge or ideas to form. So that's the focus of Patriot.tv. I've got some phenomenal other hosts who are part of the lineup. Jason Lewis, who used to sub for Rush a lot, is my lead in. That's exciting. It's on every day at 7 p.m. Eastern or 6 p.m. Central.
Now, you had your podcast before that. And so here you are, your mom, you're raising your family. And when did you really become an education advocate?
Yeah, it wasn't long after I started home educating my kids, or home, I should say, I homeschooled them, which was my mistake, but it wasn't long after I started homeschooling them. So maybe a year or two, I just talking to other people. And then I realized, you know, I had a lot to share. I had already started blogging about it. I decided to blog about it when I first got underway, just as a way to help other people. If maybe my mistakes would help other people, or my triumphs might help somebody learn. And then as time went on, I realized. They are robbing our culture of the family unit. They've been doing it for decades and decades. They've been doing it since school started, basically, since the first public school, the first government school. And I'm not saying that everybody who was involved had nefarious intentions, but there are players who came onto the scene who co-opted the schools for nefarious intentions. So we ought to be calling them factory schools, because that's essentially what they were designed to do: create factory workers who didn't question authority, who did their jobs and went home and didn't gripe about it. That's basically what they were enacted to do. Now we just call them child prisons, but that's my kids. So the idea is, you know, we have to get away from this idea that school has something right about it. And so what we're doing is we're abandoning the building, but we're still going to keep the ideas behind school, because the ideas are perverted. The ideas are corrupt. And so we have to get back to what education really is. To that end, I'll show you this book. So I wrote The Playbook for Home Learning. This is actually, it's a workbook. I don't know if you can see, but it's got like blank pages and stuff. It's a workbook that I developed based on a conference that I did. And for the workbook, I put together 15 videos. So you get the workbook and the 15 video series. And it basically takes you out of the school paradigm and asks you to consider what future you envision for your child. And how, and then design a path to get them there. That's education. Education really is raising a child into adulthood. Well, do you know how to adult? Yes, you are adult. You have a job, you make a living, you're raising a family. You're the culmination of what an education is. Why can't you impart that, the best part of you, right, to your children? This is what being an adult is. And it takes years, because we grow so slowly as human beings. I mean, we're not like other mammals. We take a long time to mature. So how do you engage a child into maturity? And to that end, I say, parents, you're the curriculum. It's not more complicated than that. Sure, you've been taught that if your child doesn't know calculus by the age of 12, he's a loser. That's a lie. If your child needs to know calculus, if you do it right, he'll go teach himself calculus when it's time. Things like that. So that's what I cover in the playbook for home learning. Oh, and also I've developed a new resource for parents who may be just embarking on homeschooling. It's called the Homeschool Starter Gift Set. And it actually combines this book. I have them here. This book, I didn't write this book, but I wish I had, 50 Things Every Child Should Know Before Leaving Home. It's a brilliant book. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it goes through the things that you want your child to know about that they would never learn in school, like how to be charitable, how to change a tire, like how to be a human being, how to love people, how to behave at a funeral or whatever, like how to be a human being. That's, this book sort of goes into a little bit more depth of that. And it's very well organized. It's almost a checklist. There's space for note-taking and stuff. And so you get one for the parent for each child because you dedicate the book to each child. And that way, when the child is ready to leave home, you're like, well, we did it. Yay, you're ready. You know, that kind of a thing. So that's part of it. This one I wrote is Teach from Love. This is a school year devotional for families, teaching children virtue. This is a conversation that we ought to be having with our children. What is virtue? Why are we virtuous? Why don't we lie? Now, the schools would have you believe that lying is perfectly acceptable if it benefits you, survival of the fittest and all that, right? But we know that that's a terrible thing to tell a child. But why? How do you teach a child not to lie, right? So that's in this. And then this one, this was my first book, There Are Your Kids, An Inspirational Journey from Self-Doubter, that's me, to Homeschool Advocate, also me. And so that's sort of my journey. This is a Why You Should Homeschool and How Easy It Is book, I say. So it's those four books, and then it's a bunch of other resources that I've assembled to get people on their way. I've got some starter curriculum so you can try it out from some of my favorite curricula suppliers. And some other things, some neat toys and games that you do with your family. Oh, it also has our movie. Did Kevin talk to you guys about Miracle in East Texas?
Yes, a little bit.
So this movie's coming out again in theaters for Easter. I'm actually really excited about that. So people can actually see it in the theaters again, or if they missed it the first time. But because this movie is based on an absolutely true story, even though it's a comedy, it's a true story about the greatest oil strike in the history of the world during the Depression in Texas. It's an incredible story. So I developed a curriculum to go along with it. And it's a simple curriculum. It take maybe an hour, you talking with your kids. But I want to expose parents to this idea that they have so much to offer their children. I want them to compare themselves to the 22-year-old newly graduated teaching student. You have so much more to offer your children than a newly graduated teaching student, and then many of the teachers out there. Why are you selling yourself so short? And it's because you've been indoctrinated to think that you're useless when it comes to the education of your child.
And are those on Brave Books? Can you get all that stuff? Where do you get those resources?
Sorbostudios.com. So Brave Books is a completely separate entity, and that's a book that Kevin did with Brave. They supply children's books, really good children's books. Highly recommend them. But the Homeschool Starter Gift Set is only a Sorbo Studios production.
Well, go ahead, Doc.
No, my daughter just blessed us with our first grandchild, a granddaughter, and my both her and her husband are educators. He's a phys ed teacher in New York City school system, and she's an ESL teacher on Long Island, and it's very difficult. You know, they talk about being conservative in that system and how difficult it is, and I'm trying to get them out of New York and try to get them to, I'm talking to my daughter about homeschooling. Obviously, she has skills to do so, but those resources would be great.
So, and we know you also, we've been able to listen to your regular podcast quite a few times as well. So tell us about that show and some of the guests that you have on there. Because, I mean, people that listen to us like to, a lot of times they pick through the different subjects, you know, that might, you know, hit a hot button. So what are some of the people that you've had on your show and topics that you discuss in your regular podcast?
Well, my podcast is now sort of morphed into the Sam Sorbo Show on Patriot.tv. I still do the podcast. It's basically I'm taking one Patriot show a week and putting it out as the podcast because, cool, frankly, it's a lot. But the podcast that I was doing, I was interviewing, forgive me, people that interested me, people who are in the fight for truth and the fight for freedom. I was just interviewing them as interested me. So I just recently had on Jordan Peterson's wife, Sean McBriarty, who's very, very in the fight for against the woke agenda in schools. Topher Field, who is from Australia, and he was basically the face of the resistance to what became the biggest lockdowns in the world, the harshest lockdowns in the world. The Australian police in Melbourne actually started shooting rubber bullets against their own citizens who were peacefully protesting. There was no violence except from the police against the citizenry. And as I'm sure you know, rubber bullets are not non-lethal. They're just less lethal. So, you know, so I, for my podcast, I interview people who interest me, who are doing interesting things. And that's basically what I'm doing on the Sam Sorbo Show on Patriot.tv. It's a little bit more focused on just current events, always through the lens of education, because education colors the way that we perceive the world. So right now we're educating children to believe that they're either victims or oppressors. That will color the way that they see the world for the rest of their lives. It will be very difficult for them to get off of that position because they're being taught this at such a young age. If you're a Black child, you are oppressed. You're a victim, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you have to look at every white person as an oppressor, as somebody who hates Black people. I mean, they are teaching abject racism in our schools today. That's child abuse.
It absolutely is. And, you know, our focus for our podcast, we really started in 2020. And of course, we had 50,000 people downloading us every month, and we were shut down on three platforms, three different servers in a row. Of course, we're all doctors that are in our podcast and talking about these things. So we're well aware, but we're also thankful for people like you, Sam, that's putting out the truth. So we're really excited about your ministry. We're excited for you to come in to Tampa and talk about, again, saving our children. It has to start with the parents. It has to start with education. And I think that that's something that God is put you in this time and place for a reason. So it's really exciting to see you got quite a life here now. Your kids are getting more grown and sounds like you're getting pretty busy and you got your own TV show. So I think God's going to restore back some of the things you might have had to, you know, just take one side or the other. But I think the other side of this professional career is going to come back for you really strong. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Any other question, Doc?
No, I'm good. Sam, very nice to meet you. Look forward to seeing you at the conference.
Me too. I'm looking forward to the conference. Thanks so much.
Alex has got one more question, and we also want to ask you, of course, how we can pray for you. So, yeah.
But before that, I want to ask, because we asked Kevin, how did you become a Christian? When did you become a Christian?
Oh, my goodness. So that's a bit of a long story, but suffice it to say, when I figured out that I had done what I had been taught to do to achieve happiness, which was to make money, I realized how wrong my education had been. And so I went on a search for meaning, because if that wasn't the goal, and clearly it wasn't, because I made money and then what? I went on a search for meaning. I found order in the universe, and I decided that the name for that order must be God. I could have called it something else, but I figured, why not? Call it what it is. So that's my story.
Well, the Bible says that when we seek that truth, we will find it. And so we're so happy because we all feel the same way. So how can we pray for you, Sam?
Oh, you know what? It's very kind of you to ask. Just pray that the Holy Spirit gives me the words to reach people with the truth. You know, it's not so much what I say, it's what they hear. And so I pray that I will say the things that they need to hear in whatever way they need to hear it, that they would see truth.
Right. Dr. Dennis, you want to pray us out, brother?
Sure, Doc. Lord God, I just want to thank you today for this wonderful interview of Sam Sorbo. Lord, we just ask that you put your hand over her life, Kevin's life, their family life. Keep your hand of protection over them, Lord. Keep your Holy Spirit moving through them, Lord God, and that they would reach the masses with these messages that need to be heard. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks so much, Sam. Thank you. God bless you guys. And we'll be praying
for you. We'll see you soon.
And we're going to see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Kevin Cruz giving you another pump because guess what? The Supernatural Junkies are on Rumble. All you have to do is go to Rumble, go to search, and when you search for channels, you look for Supernatural Junkies, and all of our stuff is going to start popping up. It's great because you're going to be able to see the links. You'll get to see exactly why we are saying what we're saying. But most importantly, this is a great way to share with your family and your friends exactly why we are living in prophetic times and why we cannot give up access to our bodies.
Hey, folks, it's Dr. Dennis from Supernatural Junkies. I just want to talk to you today about Protandim. I've been taking Protandim for a few years, and you know what? I feel a difference. I am younger than my age. At least I think I am. Anyway, Protandim is a strong antioxidant producer in your body because what it does, it causes your body to increase its glutathione production. And glutathione, folks, is the strongest antioxidant your body has. So if you want to keep strong antioxidants in your body and be a healthier you, I suggest you use Protandim.